Rainmaker FM. You're listening to The Digital Entrepreneur, the show for folks who want to discover smarter ways to create and sell profitable digital goods and services. This podcast is a production of Digital Commerce Institute, the place to be for digital entrepreneurs. For more information, go to rainmaker.fm/digital commerce. That's rainmaker.fm/digital commerce.
Welcome to The Digital Entrepreneur, everyone. I am your host, Sean Jackson, and I'm joined, as always, by the eclectic Jessica Frick. Jessica, how the frick are you today?
I am eclectic, Sean. How the Jackson are you?
Very good. I got a new thesaurus, so I'm going to try new names. So.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's on now.
So we left last week's episode with the question of the week, which is this. How much is too much competitive research, right? I mean, obviously, you're going to do some of it if you're an online entrepreneur, but how much is too much? So Jess, what do you say? Should you do a lot of it or a little of it or none at all? What do you say?
I think you need to do a lot of it. I mean, obviously, you can't focus all of your attention on it, but I don't think you should ever really take your eye off of the game.
Yeah, I understand that. But here's the thing, though. If you're a small business guy or gal, your time is probably the most valuable asset that you have, right? And you never have enough of it. There's only 24 hours in a day. That's it. If you're spending too much time worrying or looking at what other people do, don't you think there's a tendency to start to morph into meeting what your competition is doing and not trying to concentrate on your unique proposition by yourself?
Well, I can see how being, you know, untainted with your view of your product could certainly help you be unique. But if you don't know what's in the market and perhaps what's failed or why or what the market even is asking for, how could you possibly know whether A, you're unique, and B, whether you've really got something you want to put your weight behind?
Yeah, and maybe it's a matter of semantics, right? Because competitive research to me implies this concept of, I have a competitor out there, I'm going to be watching them diligently, and I'm going to be meeting them step by step by step, right? As opposed to, and I'll throw out a new idea, alternative research, okay? We have alternative facts.
Boy.
Facts, we can have alternative research, right?
Okay, so what is alternative research, Sean?
Well, alternative research is this concept of, what are the alternatives to my product or service that are available out there, okay? Not who is my competition per se, but what are the alternatives that I'm competing against, right? Because maybe people are using a very simple Excel spreadsheet to do their job, right? That's an alternative to what you're doing. It's not a competitor. You're not going to compete against Microsoft, for goodness sakes, right? But it is an alternative to what is out there. So maybe as part of your normal work week, thinking about what are the alternatives that people are turning to, and looking at that as a way to understand your audience better, while at the same time realizing that those alternatives have competing factors that you may be able to address. What do you think of that?
I think that's really smart. I think the message here is, you know, don't try to keep up with the Joneses, but know
don't
why
ignore them either.
You're better than the Joneses.
That's right. And I think that comes down to it because, you know, I look at competitive research and I've seen companies that actually have gotten so fixated on it that they're trying to match feature for feature, or they're trying to play, they get pulled off of their messaging and start to morph into their competition messaging, which pretty much makes them non-differential in the marketplace.
Yep, master of none.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's a balance, but I do think you are correct. You need to be, I think, keenly aware of the ecosystem, right? What is happening there? You know, what is going on? What are people looking at doing? And that could be a direct competitor, you know, product or service that is, you know, literally targeting you. Or it could be just, you know, hey, people are figuring out some other way to accomplish what they want. And that's the alternative that they are using. And knowing that may make your product better if you can make that alternative not so attractive.
I think that what you just said is airtight.
There, I finally got one right. I finally got one right. Oh my gosh, Jess. It only took us so many episodes for me to be right about something. Holy cow. I feel so special.
Nailed it.
So now that I've won one, Jess, let's do this. Let's talk about who we have on the show today, because we have a very, very special guest coming up in the next segment. Who is that, Jess?
We have John Henshaw from Raven Tools and now TapClick.
Exactly. And John, I think, understands this idea of competitive research. He created up a product that was a leader in its space where many, many people came in and copied him, et cetera. He has gone through the trials and tribulations of being the only person to having tons of people, to what that did to his business, where it led him, what he learned from it. So when we get back from the break, Jess and I are going to be interviewing John Henshaw from Raven Tools, a very close friend of ours, about how he thought and thinks about competitive research in the technology space. You won't want to miss this, so stay tuned. The Digital Entrepreneur is brought to you by the all-new StudioPress Sites, a turnkey solution that combines the ease of an all-in-one website builder with the flexible power of WordPress. It's perfect for bloggers, podcasters, and affiliate marketers, as well as those selling physical goods, digital downloads, and membership programs. If you're ready to take your WordPress site to the next level, see for yourself why over 200,000 website owners trust StudioPress. Go to rainmaker.fm/StudioPress right now. That's rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. Welcome back from the break, everyone. And Jessica, we have on today's show a good friend to both of us, actually, our good buddy, John Henshaw. Will you please introduce John Henshaw, the awesome one, to our amazing audience?
The awesome one. And of course, the All-American water polo player.
Oh, good one.
I know, but I do have a much better intro. John is the Director of Digital Marketing and Product Evangelist for TapClick and Raven Tools. Big news there, TapClick and Raven Tools. He's the co-founder of Raven Internet Marketing Tools, an online marketing management and reporting platform that was recently acquired by TapClick. He has lived all over the world and is most certainly a subject matter expert and one heck of an awesome guy. John Henshaw.
Oh, that's the greatest, I think, intro I think I've ever had. And I want you to introduce me as the awesome one to my kids. I want to see how they react.
More importantly, to his wife, actually. Right, she wouldn't even know who that is.
What? Who are you and why are you saying that?
Hey, John, thank you. Thank you for being on the show, man. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's get into this, John, because your story is fascinating to me insofar as what you did with Raven, right? Because, you know, I got into SEO back around, let's say, 2006-ish, 2007, and Raven was at all of these SEO conferences that I kept on attending. And, you know, it was great because Raven was really the only person there with a suite of tools that were really designed for the SEO space at the time. And your story is fairly interesting because while you were the first one, you weren't the only one. So tell us a little bit about how that was to be kind of one of the first out the gate and the metamorphosis that occurred over the years.
Well, it's interesting because being first out of the gate is both a blessing and a curse, you know, and it's the type of thing where you're definitely getting attention for what you're doing, because you essentially were in a position of innovating. I mean, if nobody's done it before, you're basically innovating. You are creating something that nobody has yet. At the same time, when you're the first person doing it, it's not exactly the best. I mean, it's just the best we have at the time. And so when we first launched it, it was not good, and people told us, and we actually took it into a private beta after that, and the reason why was because we had some big agencies both in the US and UK, and they saw what we were doing, and they needed it, and they didn't want to build it themselves because it was complex what we were doing, but they were basically like, if you will work with us, we will help you in what we need, you know, as far as we had a few problems we still weren't solving for them, and so they worked with us to help them solve those problems. And so after about 6 to 9 months, we relaunched it, and then that ended up being successful. And that's even just a good piece of information for anybody trying to enter a space and to do something where maybe there isn't a solution there yet. And that is, you're going to get the best product when you work really, really closely with the people who need that product. And that was really what set us on a good foot when and made us, I would say, successful, particularly for the first several years.
Right. And I think that's an interesting part and a good story, because you were coming into the SEO space really when it still had a big black hat or black box mystique around it, right? That it was, you know, this very unique art form, et cetera, et cetera. You were one of the first people to put all of these tools into a suite that people could use to manage their online marketing, specifically in the search marketing space. But there was a downside to all this, John, because you were the first one, right? And you kind of had to focus and make it better. And then you released it out there. And then everybody starts saying, wow, Raven Tools, Raven Tools, Raven Tools. But then something happened along the way, which is?
Competition.
Exactly. Which is the whole point of today's show.
Was I supposed to answer that?
Yes, you were. You did. And that had to drive you crazy, because here you are, small guys in Tennessee, coming out with this tool. Everyone's finally raving about Raven Tools, and you got it working. And then every day, it seems like there's somebody new. Talk about that.
Well, it was interesting at first, because when it's such a small field of players, everybody knows about each other. And back then, we would really, really know about our competitors, because there weren't that many people to look for or look at. And then on top of that, if you're very competitive, like I am, you know, you're just always going, what are they doing? and trying to second guess what, you know, what their next move is going to be, and what do they mean by that particular, you know, blog or press release and that type of thing. And you drive yourself crazy. And that is okay, particularly when it's a small field and everybody's innovating, because it really keeps you innovating at a very quick pace. And the same is true for them. You know, what you do, then they'll do, and then the other person will do something. But I would say, as the sort of like market matures in an area and you start to get more people, it's not really sustainable. You know, as you start to expand what you do, in other words, if you're constantly innovating, then you're most likely making new tools and new features, and then another tool and then a new feature, which was generally the case with us and especially those early competitors. Then you kind of get to a point where you can't live like that. And I think for us, you know, we started to really want to make our own path and have our own vision. And I remember where we started with SEO, I just had this vision of, oh, I want to be more than SEO now. I mean, we could go way down this path, and we could do social, and we could do paid, and that type of thing. And then the other people we were competing with early on started to go down another path, and that seemed like a really good idea at the time, and it seemed like that would help us remain competitive and make us unique and different. But something along the way happened that I didn't see coming, and it's just, and you know, some of this is just from lack of experience, and that was the bigger you want to get and the more that you want to do, it opens up opportunities for new competitors to come in and take a piece of your pie.
Mm.
And so what I saw that started to happen was there were people who would go, you know what, that's a really awesome tool that they're doing over there, and I see they're making money, you know, off of that. Would like to make some money off that too. And if I think the very first one where people started coming in was with the rank tracking. Nobody was doing it. We were one of the very first people. We may have been the first person, our first company to do a web SaaS-based model of rank tracking. I think before us there was like Web CEO, but that was all desktop based. I mean, you ran it off your computer. So I think we were one of the first ones to actually back then do the scraping and get the data as a web service. And so a lot of people started seeing that and just entering that space. And and before you knew it, I would just look around and it was, there are five companies doing this now. There were 10 companies. There were 20 companies. I mean, it was insane. And it seemed like practically every week there'd be a new company that's like, we do, you know, rank tracking. We do it better than Raven. We do it better than maybe some other competitor that started to become more well known. And it gets kind of crazy. And of course, we're off trying to do all these different things. And I guess what happened was, they have an advantage that you don't have if you start building your product more diverse and bigger and with more tools than maybe it needs to have. And that is that they are focusing on that one thing and to try and make that better than you. And that's their core focus and it's their only focus. And it is easy to not be able to compete as well as you go forward if you're focused on too many things.
Right.
And it's easy for them to come in and actually take market share if they're only focused on that one thing. And so that was something that we definitely experienced around at least the ranking and a few other areas that we added to our platform.
But how do you handle this? I mean, what is the recommendation that you have to handle this going forward? Because certainly, I mean, here you are, you're creating up something new in a space, you're getting attention, you start to make some money, you decide that you can do so much more, you start breaching off, all these people come chipping away. How do you handle that? I mean, how do you recommend people look at that? Because inevitably, if you have any type of success online, this model will be something that happens to you. So how do you recommend people should handle this?
So I can tell you how we did handle it, but I'm not sure that's the right way to handle it. And a lot of it depends on your resources. So I think the trouble we got into was that I, in particular, had a very ambitious vision for what I wanted the product to be. But at the same time, my business partners and I wanted to remain bootstrapped. You know, we really were prideful and liked the ability to really retain control and make decisions on our own and to not have to be, you know, able to just deal with a demand from a banker or something like that. We like sort of that level of control, but yet we wanted to build this really, you know, gigantic thing. And looking back on it, that's really hard to pull off. I think very few people pull it off, and it's really hard to pull off. If we had gone maybe originally the VC route, and we actually had a lot of money and we could spend it on a lot of resources, I think it may have worked out a lot better than I thought. It would have, or did, that is. So in that case, it might work out. But looking back, if you're asking me, like, what have I learned? You know, looking back, I would not have tried to build so many different things, especially things, tools, and resources that were very different from each other. And the reason why was because a lot of the things that we were known for early on ended up being kind of chipped away and taken from those other companies who were only focusing on those core tools. And so whereas we were trying to do all these other things, and I would even say that is what led us to why people use Raven today the most, and why we were even of interest to TapClicks to acquire us, which is at the end of the day, we weren't able to sustain the best link management and link building tool out there. We did it. We had it at the time, but we had people like Buzzstream come along and just because they were micro, you know, just totally focused on it, they were able to just innovate and make a better version of that than what we had originally done. What we were able to do is the reporting. We were able to, because we had become so diverse and made tools all around this, it enabled us to connect to a ton of data connections. And so we kind of evolved into a marketing report platform almost unbeknownst to us. I mean, like originally it was all about management tools and outreach and that type of thing. When it was all said and done, we ended up becoming more of this analysis and reporting tool set. And we allowed these other people to kind of come in and grab market share on the smaller areas.
Gotcha. So let's talk about how you factor in the competitive side for our audience to think about. In other words, you know, you were doing a lot of innovation, but it wasn't necessarily driven in response to your competition. It was more driven into the view that you had in this world, right? I want to achieve this. I want to create this, and I have the resources to do it. Hence, I'm going to go do it. But when you started to see that competition, I mean, how did you kind of respond to it? I mean, there is a psychological aspect when you saw some of the people that were like, innovating on tools that you had literally created up and were basically drawn away. What would you suggest our audience think about that? How to respond to that competition, if you will?
So you obsess over it. If you are a person who it's your company and it's your thing, or you're the product person, it's really difficult to not obsess over it. And so you definitely obsess over it. If anybody out there is like, yeah, I obsess over it, then you're normal. If you're not obsessing over it, you're not normal. You should probably be doing something else. And so you obsess over it, but the most practical way to approach it is don't freak out and just look at what is it they're doing that you can do, and what is it that they're not doing that you could do. And so that's generally how I would approach it. I would go, okay, that's really cool what you did. I don't like it because that'll probably appeal to my prospective customer. But now let me think of what's the thing that I can, you know, usurp that with. What is the thing that I think is next? What is something that is current that I think that we that would be incredibly useful to our customers and potential customers, something that would be very marketable, and that's what we would do. So that would be my advice to anybody out there if they're sitting there like, okay, here's my product. I already have my roadmap. I'm happy with where we're going, but now, you know, this competitor over here has just come in and they've released this really cool feature and I don't have that. Then I think, you know, the approach is basically, one, can you add that and can you do it quickly? And then two, can you make it better? And then the third part being, is there something they don't even have that's not even related to that, that if you added would make you look even better than them? And so that's generally how we've approached it in the past. And that is how I approach things today.
So obviously you're a data guy, big into analysis. Is analysis paralysis even real for digital entrepreneurs? Can you go too far? And if you do, like, how do you know that you're there?
I think that as far as data goes, data is important to me, but I'm more interested in the result of that data. I want to know, you know, what did you find? A lot of times people can get stuck in looking at the data and constant and even thinking, I don't have enough data. You know, the truth is you're never going to have enough data. The other problem with obsessing over data is that you can never come to a conclusion sometimes. In other words, we did a bunch of research around different areas, and when we looked at it, we were like, I have no conclusion. I'm not even sure what to do here. Like, the data is all over the place. It's so difficult to get to that. And so instead of getting mired down in data, especially if that data doesn't have a clear sort of direction or solution, what we would do in those situations is just talk to your customers. I mean, it's literally just almost from a UX perspective, how they do those type of interviews and things, talk to your existing customers, talk to the people who are loyal to you, talk to the people who will be honest with you, talk to the people who have left, if they'll give you the time of day, and find out what it is that was keeping them there, or why they were drawn toward it, or why they left, or why they went to that competitor. That's the type of research that I think ends up giving you the most insights, especially when it's person to person, not some survey, but literally spending time with them on the phone or in real life and getting an idea of what's really going on there. And then as you start to collect that, you don't have to interview 100 people or 1,000 people. Typically in the past for us, once we talked about 10 or 15 people, we had a pretty good idea of sort of what was going on, you know, around a certain area. And then from there, you can use both data and your gut to make better product decisions and to maybe pivot or change some of your roadmap to take care of some of the issues that you found after talking with them. And so those things will just present themselves. They'll start to become obvious. I think the problem that people get into is when they stay at one of those extremes, meaning that you're almost always going to make bad decisions and get in trouble if you are only following your gut, and you're almost always going to miss something or go the wrong direction if you're only looking at data. And so to find that sort of that happy medium, to not, you know, do things based on a giant committee, but, you know, have a couple decision makers and you guys make the decision and just do it. I mean, it's either going to work or it's not. But that combination of get enough data, that's actual hard data, that's quantitative, but then get that qualitative part, and then you just have to make a decision from there and hope it's the right decision.
John, I want to follow up on that, because I'm going to tell you, as someone listening to this, I would be thinking this is all great information, except for what you just said, which I 100% agree with, which is talk to the customer, right? I mean, literally talk to the customer, you know, but here's something that can happen. The customer, especially if they are someone who switched to the competition, may call your baby ugly, right? and not your physical baby, but the baby that you blood, sweat, and tears, months and years building up and seeing your competitors attack and talking to someone who's left. I mean, how do you get over that? Because, I mean, there is no question that Raven Tools, the passion and soul that you and Scott brought to this was huge, right? I mean, huge. And you can see it manifested in the product. And then to talk to someone who's left you has got to be gut-wrenching, or someone who you're talking to and they maybe not even get it, right? Or they may be paying you, but they're not really happy about it. They just were told to do it. How do you get over that psychology of having someone tell you the truth?
By me not talking to them. that's really what it comes down to. I mean, seriously, the amount of confirmation bias that I bring to something, I don't think I've ever done a survey where my bias wasn't just all over it, based on either what I wanted the answer to be or what I was interested in. And so the only way to go about doing this is to make sure that a founder or somebody who is a stakeholder in the sense of, you know, stock and financial interest and that type of thing, is not doing the actual asking, is not doing the interviewing. You always want to try to find somebody who has the least stake into it in that sense, to be the person who does the interviewing, who does the questioning, that works with the data. That's your best chance of it, you know, not being tainted. And then if you're a co-founder, or if you're somebody who's in that decision-making place and you still can't deal with that data, well, you have put your own personal problems. But I mean, you're gonna have to deal with that yourself. I mean, in other words, part of being a leader and making good decisions is that you can handle things that you don't like and information you don't like, and then you can make good decisions based on that. And so the best decisions we've ever made with the product has always been either having a third party or somebody who is truly impartial do the questioning and get in gathering that information, running the analysis and creating those insights, and then presenting that to us so we can make good decisions.
You know what, John? I loved how you ended this interview, and I think you're 100% spot on.
Wait, it's over?
Yes, it's a. So I cannot thank you enough for being on our show today and truly sharing both your insight, which was a hard learn, to put it mildly, over many, many years. And again, congratulations on your new role with TapClick, and we truly, truly appreciate you and everything you do for us.
Thank you. And I have to say, you said it earlier, but you guys, both of you, are wonderful friends. I've known you for a long time, and I really look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully at State of Search or something like that.
There we go. John Henshaw, everybody. And we're going to be right back after this short break. Hey, everyone. This is Sean Jackson, the host of The Digital Entrepreneur. And I want to ask you a simple question. What is your business framework for selling digital goods online? Now, if the question perplexes you, don't worry, you are not alone. Most people don't realize that the most successful digital entrepreneurs have a framework or a general process for creating and selling their digital goods in the online space. And one of the best free resources is Digital Commerce Academy. Digital Commerce Academy combines online learning with case studies and webinars created by people who make a living selling digital goods online. And the best part is that this material is free when you register. Are you interested in joining? Well, I'll make it easy for you. If you're listening to the show on your phone and are in the continental United States, I want you to send a text message to 313131 with the keyword digits, D-I-G-I-T-S. And when you send that text message, we will send you a link to the registration form right to your phone. Are you outside the United States? Don't worry. Just send us an email to digits@rainmaker.fm. Either way, we'll send you a link to the registration form so that you can sign up for free for Digital Commerce Academy. And as a special bonus, we will also subscribe you to our newsletter when you text or email us so that you can stay informed with the latest insights from the show. And don't worry, we respect your privacy and we will not share your email or phone number, and you can easily unsubscribe at any time. So if you want to start building or improving your framework for selling digital goods online, then please send a text to 313131 with the keyword digits, or send us an email at digits@rainmaker.fm. You won't be disappointed. Welcome back from the break, everyone. And it's the time of the show where we give our recommendations for the week. Jess, let me guess what you're going to say. I think you, being the nice, sweet person that you are probably going to say that people should be looking at.
What's your guess?
Raven Tools.
Yes, that is my tools to recommend. So, you know, when I worked with Rainmaker, I used Raven all the time. Now that I'm working with Pushfire, obviously we are huge fans of Raven Tools and also TapClix. So the difference here, I think, for those who are listening to this show, you're probably not enterprise level just yet. You may be running an agency, in which case TapClix is a fantastic option for you and your client reporting. If you need just the essentials, bringing everything together, helping you do a comprehensive overview of everything that you should be knowing as far as the digital landscape is concerned with your business, Raven Tools has what you need.
This is not a sales pitch. This is a recommendation. And I would concur with your recommendation, but not such a selly way. Mine is actually something that John told us that he likes to use. When he's doing competitive research, he actually likes to use SimilarWeb, which is kind of interesting because that is a service I hadn't really learned or heard a lot about. So he's definitely a big fan of SimilarWeb. I've used it. It's a good way to get, you know, sites and categories in some sort of order and listing. And then on the SEO side, you know, they use at Raven Tools all of the different SEO services out there, right, Jess? I mean, they are very, very comprehensive in what they do, right?
Absolutely.
So, and the one that he tends to turn to, though, is Majestic. Even though Moz is fantastic, Ahrefs, et cetera, and all of them have their strengths and weaknesses, Majestic has been a tool from the SEO perspective, looking at the backlinkscape structure, looking at some of the SEO details that are somewhat technical, to be fair. He tends to lean towards Majestic. So that'll be my recommendation, is using SimilarWeb to kind of look at sites and categories and rankings therein, and then of course conversely looking at Majestic for kind of the SEO aspect of your site at a fairly I want to say detailed level, because you've used Majestic, it's a phenomenal tool like all of them, but it can be very detailed, which is why Raven makes it so nice. But at the same token, those are the two that I recommend, and we've got Raven, TapClix, SimilarWeb, and of course Majestic as our recommendations of the week. So Jess, ready for the question that we want to leave everyone pondering as we conclude this episode?
I'm ready.
Should you, as a digital entrepreneur, write a book?
No. Uh-huh.
No, what?
Well, I mean, you can, but you don't need to.
Ah, well, that's a good point. Maybe you don't need to.
I feel like everybody's saying you have to. And I'm going to guess you're going to say you do.
Well, of course I'm going to say you do. I think if you're going to be in the online space, if you really want to stand out, remember how we were talking about, you know, how weird do you need to be, how unique and remarkable you need to be? I think a book puts a big value on there. I call it the $15 business card, right? So, because trust me, you go into any meeting and you put that down, no one's going to read the thing. But boy, you become an instant authority just because you have a paperback volume with your name on it. So,
I think we should discuss this more at length.
I think it is deserving of a deeper conversation, which we will do on the next episode of the digital entrepreneur. Everyone, have a great week.
Thanks for listening.